If you listen to Lynn and I when we have our Tuesday education talk, we often talk about the steps that each school district is taking in one way or another to find ways to save money. I think I always say to Lynn that unless people start having more babies, something has to be done because there's less people and less money. So, therefore, each school is doing things. We covered the Cairo-Durham episode. And now over in Chatham, they have their consolidation method. And we had David Laveau, Wayne Coe, and Steve Gilger in on yesterday. And today we are honored to have Melanie Spock, the president of the Board of Education for Chatham Central School District, and Cheryl Nusafaro, the superintendent of Chatham Central School District. And they are here to talk about the consolidation plan and the accompanying bond issue. And ladies, we are delighted to have you here. Let's get right into it. Tell us from your perspective, whichever one of you want to go first, what it is that needed to be done and why you think that this is the way it should be done.
Well, as you know, our communities are faced with declining enrollment.
And this is Melanie Spock speaking.
Yeah, Melanie Spock. and the Board of Education, this process started in 2010. We discussed ways and efficient. We've been working on efficiencies all along on how we can save money because we really want the best program for our students. So consolidation was one of the things that came up and one of the things that we decided to look into. So that's kind of where we are now, and I'll let Cheryl go into more of the details on that.
Well, when the board charged me a few years ago with looking at the feasibility of consolidating buildings, it's been a very long and thorough process because we didn't take the decision lightly. It's a very serious move. But as a part of that, they charged me with looking at not just whether we could save money, but how we could use a consolidation to preserve program and educational opportunities, and also as how, you know, every crisis has the potential to be an opportunity. So there's no question that enrollment and finances are causing crises or pending crises for schools, but they wanted to get ahead of the crisis. They didn't want us to wait until we were in an urgent situation. They wanted to be proactive, and they wanted to see how we could use this as an opportunity. So we engaged in quite an extensive research process, engaged a team to do a facility study to look at the feasibility of consolidating, enrollment studies, transportation studies, so that we could look at the whole picture, and that's where we came up with our consolidation plan. The capital project, which voters will vote on next Tuesday, is to part of that opportunity. It's an opportunity to address not just space issues and accommodate the new grade levels when we consolidate to two buildings, but it's also an opportunity to update our spaces and to improve them so that we have the opportunities that other schools have to offer programming that better prepares our students for the 21st century.
Okay, you know where I think some of the, correct me if I'm wrong, the miscommunications might be is that you spoke very succinctly consolidation and capital improvement. And I think what many people are seeing is, well, consolidation, it means you're cutting back, then why are you spending? So can you address that particular aspect?
Mm-hmm. By consolidating, we're eliminating positions that are really one per building. For example, we have one principal per building, one nurse per building, one librarian per building. So by consolidating students to two buildings, we're really reducing duplicative services, which puts us in the position where we're saving over $800,000 per year. And that's really almost entirely salaries and benefits from those types of positions. We elected, as we studied this and listened to the community, We elected to take part of that savings and put it into enhancing our facilities. Our high school was built in the 1970s. Our elementary school is a little bit older, and some of our spaces haven't been updated since that point. And as you know, education's changed quite a bit since the 1970s. So some of the work that we want to do, for example, our elementary gymnasium is not a full-size gymnasium. And so that puts a number of limitations on us. Expanding it into a full-size gymnasium will make us better able to accommodate the sixth grade when they come to the elementary school. But there's no seating in the current gym. So by adding seating, we can now, and making a full-size gym, we can now use it for games. We can now use the larger gym for indoor recess. And by moving some of our students up off the floor, we can now accommodate some assemblies that are not possible in a smaller gym with all the students sitting on the floor. So we'll be able to have some programming opportunities. For example, certain kinds of dance assemblies and those kinds of things. So we're really using that space to give our students a full-size gym, be able to better accommodate fitness-based programming for the 21st century, and add a number of other kinds of improvements to our program. And so that's the kind of thinking that went into the various components of the project. So we did take some of our savings and apply it to improving our facilities in order to offer a better learning environment for our students.
So how do you address the concerns about the amounts that are being spent in the various, were you able, have you seen the article in the Chatham Courier?
Yes.
Okay, so that's, I guess, what I'm speaking of. How do you address the points that they made in the Chatham?
Chatham Press. So there are a couple of things that people don't always understand about the way school building projects work. We're subject to a lot of rules and regulations. The costs that are out there right now are estimated costs prepared by our architectural firm, which is highly experienced in school construction and school design. When we get to the point of moving forward, after voter approval, after SED approval, when we get to the point of moving forward, we have to put that project out to bid, and we have to award the project to the lowest responsible bidder. Then we'll know what the actual cost is, and anybody, any responsible bidder, is free to bid on the project. Okay, so that's one piece. What happens is, because it's a school, we have very strict building codes that we have to follow. Everybody does, but we're dealing with children and their safety and well-being. And we're also dealing with public projects that have to be built to last. If you build something in your house and it only lasts 5 years, that's your decision in terms of what you have to do. But construction in schools is a little bit more expensive because we're building it to last for a very, very long time. And then the third thing is there are labor laws and requirements, most specifically the Wicks Law, that add on a layer of cost for public projects. So while it seems expensive, to a layperson who maybe says, well, I can do a parking lot for this much money, it really is because it's a public project that has to do with a school and all the requirements that we have to meet. And the final cost will be determined by the bids that come in.
Okay, so the figures that we are reading now are really not the final cost?
Those are estimates that are prepared by our architectural firm.
When I had the, because I had to do a quick study, I'm listening to the three gentlemen that we had here yesterday, and I wanted to just get them to summarize, their opinion as to what it was that they were concerned with. And I'd like you just to take about 30 seconds and try to address the particular things that Mr. Laveau pointed out. Well, I guess we're not. He was talking about the safety issue, the egress.
Mm-hmm.
That was Wayne Coe. Sorry, that was Wayne Coe. That there's only one street leading out. Mm-hmm. What is your opinion on that?
Well, you know, Mr. Coe has brought this up a number of times, as have other people. This is something that the school board discusses on a regular basis and will continue to discuss. It's actually not uncommon for a school to have only one driveway in and out. There are a number of schools that have that situation locally. But we have safety and evacuation plans. Our high school has been at the end of that driveway that Mr. Coe was describing for over 40 years. So we've been planning for what to do in an emergency for a very long time. I'm not going to share the specifics of that because for obvious reasons, safety plans and evacuation plans are confidential. That's in order to keep everybody as safe as possible. We value our high school students as much as we value our 7th and 8th grade students. If we felt that we didn't have appropriate evacuation plans, then we would not be having any students in that situation.
Okay. All right. I think I have it queued up correctly now, just to, 'cause it's better coming from his words.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I don't. All right. Well, at any rate, the other questions that I had in mind were on the course jump. So I think you kind of addressed that in that it really has to do with the requirements that you're under public schools. Why is it, to you, what is your take on why there is a difference between what you are saying is the requirements and the public perception?
Well, I want to be careful that the perception of a few people is not necessarily the perception of the entire public. So we've actually gotten a lot of positive feedback on our process. We had a lot of town hall meetings. We did surveys. We've sent out newsletters. We have a website. We have a Facebook page. Actually 8 town hall meetings over time. And so one of the things that happened is that the cost did evolve because with feedback from all of those different processes, we actually started out with 3 different options for projects. And eventually they coalesced into this one proposal. And then the board, well, I thought we were done.
Okay.
The board sent me back and had the staff in our various buildings run scheduling scenarios and room assignment scenarios and then come back and give more feedback. And that's where even more changes were made. So, you know, the question about why things cost what they cost, you know, I've already addressed. The one point that I didn't make at that point was that we're included in the project are gymnasiums, a music space. Just like it costs more to build a kitchen in your house than mm-hmm. a bedroom, those are specialized spaces. And the reason we're doing them at this time is because the savings from consolidation and state aid allow us to do that without raising property taxes. We're not likely to have another opportunity to build those kinds of spaces for our students or to renovate them. The question of why the costs have changed over time is because we've responded to input that we were receiving and weighed the input and incorporated what we thought was valid and best for our students. And it took us that amount of time to get to a final project proposal.
As I understand it, there was on the middle school building, there was a considerable investment prior to the building. So I guess the question arises is, after putting that investment in the building, why was that the building that was chosen to be closed? And what are the plans for that building? I love looking at it, that's for sure.
It's a beautiful building. The project you're speaking of was over 15 years ago. And those enhancements are still there and they'll still be valuable to us. Our district offices are going to the middle school. We'll continue to use the auditorium and the gymnasiums and the fields. And because we're increasing our capacity, we'll be able to address some very real issues that we have now with extensive community requests to use the facilities. So right now we can't accommodate all the requests that we get, and this will make us better able to do that. So in addition, the board was clear in its direction that we repurpose that building in some way that it would be an asset. So we're in the process of actively working on plans to do that. Some of the possibilities include an expansion of the public library, which adjoins the middle school building. I've been approached by a couple of daycare centers who are interested in having space in that building. We're looking at the possibility. Some school districts have businesses that offer, like an incubator business that temporarily leases space in return for offering internship opportunities to high school students. And there are models where colleges come in and they will partner with a school district for college professors to come in and teach classes to community and high school students. So we're exploring a lot of different possibilities for how we can use that space as a district and a community asset.
It sounds to me like there are possibilities there for that building to be a source of income for the school district.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
On the matter, and this is a central thing that I hear all the time, and I'm never sure whether it's the people in the community or the source of information, but I regularly hear this central complaint. And that is that somehow the folks who are the end users feel that they just were not communicated with, that there was not a sufficient output, there was not any suggestions solicited. How do you address that? How do you address those concerns? Because that is one of the central things that I hear all the time.
Well, we've started this process for a long time now, and I feel like we've had a lot of town hall meetings where we've taken in information. We've had some meetings with people, you know, in an office who've had more questions than others. We've always been available to answer questions, take people's input. I mean, I remember sitting in a town hall meeting where the school nurse says, my office isn't big enough. So we worked on that to get that into our project so that it would best suit the needs of the students. I feel like we put things out on our website. We have meetings. Oftentimes, our meetings are not well attended. We try the best to get the information out. And I don't know what else we could do besides have a meeting with every single person. And I don't think I have time for that. But I really do feel that we've been very diligent in getting the word out about this project and asking people what they think about it. I mean, this is for the students of Chatham and the community, and it's important. I mean, this is a big decision, and we have needed people's input on it, and I think we've worked hard to do that.
I think, if anything, Melanie's being a little bit modest in terms of the efforts of the board. the town hall meetings were set up so that I would give a presentation, and then Melanie would open up the floor to questions and comments. Some of them went on as long as 3 hours. And we had 8 of those town hall meetings over time. We had 2 focus groups that were facilitated by impartial outside folks with board members sitting and listening so that we would be sure to get an impartial opinion. The board has gone to community days and fairs and parent nights and sat at a table and answered questions and listened to the comments of people. And then, as Melanie said, we've made adjustments based on that input. So there have been actually extraordinary efforts on the part of the Board of Education to go out and to share this information. We have a website, we have a Facebook page, we have an email address specifically for questions about the capital project. As a matter of fact, an email came into my office this morning with a question. And we've gone to community groups. We even went out and said, if you can get some people together at your house, we'll come to your neighborhood. So I'm not sure what else we could have done to get the information out there.
No, okay. You are, if you just joined us, you're listening to the WGXE Morning Show. Philip is on your radio. And we are discussing the Chatham Central School District's consolidation plans and their capital improvement plan this coming Tuesday. And we're speaking with Melanie Spock, the president of the Board of Education, and Cheryl Nusaforo, the superintendent. And we are discussing all of the aspects of the project and the capital improvement project and the consolidation plan. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I'd like you to summarize for me because it, you know, whenever you have the vote's coming up Tuesday. So and you put a lot of work into it, and so I know there's got to be some something that's right here in your throat. So to summarize what you see in the future for the Chatham School District, and why you think that these particular plans are so important. You are listening to the WGXC Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM, streaming live on WGXC.org. Up in the morning. Chuck Berry, up in the morning and out to school. You know what? I guess I don't know whether you ladies talked to the people at CSX because the train, we usually have to keep a wary eye for the train coming through town right in the middle of the Oh, that's right. That's
yes.
True. That's right. Those of us who on the on my regular show, I regularly refer to Chatham as beautiful downtown Chatham, New York, where the train runs right smack dab through the middle of the town at the most inappropriate times. It always seems like when you're in a rush, there it is, waiting for you. And we are speaking with Melanie Spock, who is the president of the Board of Education, and Cheryl Nusaforo, the superintendent of the Chatham School District. And we're talking about the capital improvement project and the consolidation plan. So, ladies, really, as I said before, I definitely appreciate your coming. And I wanted to get your idea of, you know, having put so much into this, what do you see as the future? What do you see as the Chatham School District and schools in over the next 10 years? What is your vision?
Well, am I on?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're on. Here we got you.
Well, as we were developing this project, we always had three things in mind: to provide quality education for the students, quality programming, while keeping it at a cost that the community can afford, and also maintaining the traditions and history of Chatham. I feel that this project, we've used that all along, and that we're not only responsible for the students' education now, but it's also great to be planful for the future. I think this project is a great project that will give our students a 21st century learning environment, which I feel at Chatham that we need. And I hope that in the next 10 years, this project will be a success and that our students will benefit so that in the end, they are more college and career ready to go out there when they leave us.
And, you know, I have to say I'm very optimistic about the future of Chatham. I feel very fortunate to work with a Board of Education that doesn't avoid difficult issues. It would be easy to close our eyes to declining enrollment. We have reserves that can get us through for the next few years, even if we don't deal with difficult issues, with the difficult financial picture. And I think that I'm fortunate as a superintendent, the community is fortunate, and the children of Chatham are fortunate that we have a board that doesn't wait but looks into the future and tries to plan for what's coming so that they are working proactively instead of reactively to try and provide the best opportunities. And when you have a Board of Education that operates in that way, I think that speaks very positively and makes me very optimistic about Chatham's ability to handle whatever may come down the line in the next 10 years.
If on Tuesday the voters reject the capital improvement project, do you have a plan B in mind, or what will happen then?
Well, You know, given the financial projections and the enrollment projections, the board has said all along, consolidation is inevitable. We're going to need to go to two buildings. This plan, including the capital project, was developed based on all the things that we heard and all the things we believe are the right things to do for our students. If the project goes down, then we'll have to go back to the drawing board and come up with a different consolidation plan that doesn't have this capital project as a part of it. It becomes an issue of when and how, not if.
Okay. Is there anything that I left out or that you would like to add? Because I want to make sure that you get all of your points across.
No, I think we're good. Just that people should get out and vote on Tuesday.
And also, if people need more information, we recently sent out a newsletter. Our website is ChathamCentralSchools.com, www.ChathamCentralSchools.com. People are free to call my office if they have any questions. Send in an email. That email link is right on the website. Our priority has been that the community have accurate information to use when they're making their decision on Tuesday, and we very much want them to come out and vote.
We have been talking to Melanie Spock, the president of the Board of Education for the Chatham Central School District, and Cheryl Nusafaro, the superintendent of schools for the Chatham Central School District, regarding the consolidation and the capital project improvement plan, which vote is coming up on Tuesday. And I am a certified go out and vote harasser, so anyone who listens to the show knows the importance of it. Lynn and I talk about it all the time on our Tuesday sessions, and Paul Smart, the journalist, and I talk about it on Fridays. I've had Lynn do her classic explanation as to why it is important, even if you do not have children in school. Mm-hmm. It's not just for parents. These votes have a direct effect on your property taxes. So you're a part of it. So folks, it's 9 to 9. So, and I know, you know, I've just retired, so I'm kind of used to it. But I know it's a difficult haul to come home from work and bring Susie to soccer practice and Bobby to band practice and then go out and vote. But you got to do it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you can't complain, folks.
Right.
You got to get out and vote on Tuesday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., the Mary Dardis, right?
Elementary school, correct.
Mary Dardis Elementary School. I might be poking around there getting some comments on Tuesday night. Ladies, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us, Phil.
Thank you so much.
We really appreciate it. This is WGXE 90.7 FM. You're listening to the WGXE Morning Show. Philip is on your radio.